Our next guest wants you to rethink the idea of failure. He says that from an early age, we're told to be cautious, think before acting, plan for the future, avoid failure at all costs.
But he says those ideas aren't all they're cracked up to be. And if you want to succeed in your career, in life, you have to fail, and you have to do it a lot. And some of the most successful people in the world spend less time planning and more time doing.
We're joined now by Ryan Babineau. He's a career counselor and co-author of the new book, Fail Fast, Fail Often: How Losing Can Help You Win. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you tell a story in your book about a ceramics class that really illustrates the point. Can you tell us that story, please?
Yes. The story was about a ceramics teacher at a community college that tried this experiment on his class. And he, at the beginning of the class, he divided the room into two groups. In one group of students, he asked them to, he told them that their grade for the class would be based on the production of pots. So they're making pots in the class. So how many they made over the course of the term. And he would just weigh the output of everything they produced, and if they made, I don't know what the number was, but let's say they made 20 pounds, that would be an A, and if they made 15 pounds, that would be a B, and so on. And the other group, he told them that their grade would be dependent on the best piece they made over the course of the entire class. So even if it was on the first week of class, they made one very good piece, that would get them an A.
So what I would think hearing that is we'd end up with the quality group having a couple masterpieces, the quantity group having a big pile of crappy pottery. That's how did it really turn out, though?
Well, that was a surprise. How it actually turned out was that the group that was the quantity group, they just got right to work, and they just, you know, every day they were experimenting, having fun, making piece after piece, you know, making lots of mistakes. But in the process, they started to get better. I mean, they learned, you know, different ways to work with the clay. They improved their technique. And they actually ended up producing the best pieces in the class. On the other hand, the quality group, because they spent so much time kind of planning out, you know, the perfect piece they were going to do, and they really invested a lot of time on each piece they were working on, they really didn't work on that many over the length of the course, and because of that, they didn't improve. They didn't really get any better, and so their work was actually not as good as the quantity group.
So what do we learn from that? How do we apply that in our daily lives and our work lives?
Well, the lesson is that if you want to get good at something and learn, the best way to do it is do it badly as fast as you can. You know, it, just about anything you want to excel at, you need to do badly over a period of time before you learn the things that you need to learn to get better. But oftentimes the way that we approach things is we want to prepare, we want to really put a lot of effort in so we make sure we don't embarrass ourselves and make mistakes. But you know, if you look at successful people, they flip that. They look for opportunities where they can just get right out there. They can make mistakes. They can, you know, embarrass themselves. But they just learn at warp speed because they do that.
It sounds simple. It sounds kind of easy. But you used the word embarrassed there. And if I'm trying something new, especially something that other people will see the outcome of, I don't want it to be terrible. How do I overcome that fear of an embarrassing failure so I can start failing and learning?
Well, that's a big part of my whole approach. I work with people is changing their attitude towards failure. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, I work with people that are adults that have usually been successful already in their lives, and they're used to, you know, looking like experts and looking competent, and I encourage them to be willing to be a beginner at things. You know, just be a newbie. Be someone who's just out there to like try something, have fun. See, instead of seeing other people that as, you know, people that you want to impress, see them as teachers you can learn from. And it does take a shift in attitude, but it's really not that hard to do. It's just you just have to kind of change the way that you look at it, and it's once you can start seeing things from that perspective, it allows you to just embrace a lot more opportunities and have a lot more fun doing it.
We can learn a lot from kids, it seems like, right? They haven't learned to be afraid of failing like that, have they?
Yes. Yeah, it seems like you know, when we're born, we don't have this fear of failure. You know, kids are willing to just try anything. When they're contemplating, you know, riding a bike or investigating something or, you know, just trying something new, they don't say to themselves, oh, well, will I be good at it? You know, can I be better than Johnny? You know, they just, look, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try it. And it's only as we, you know, as we get older, we kind of learn to, you know, we want to excel compared to others. And I don't know, I think that natural spontaneity is kind of beaten out of us in different ways. But yeah, absolutely. Kids, you know, I know, like, my daughter's 8 years old, and definitely looking at how she approaches things really gives me an idea of the right way to go about life. Just, you know, don't worry about the consequences or whether you're going to commit to something forever or whether you're going to perform well. Just if you're curious about it and want to try it, just go for it.
Speaking of kids, do I remember there was a story about chess in your book and a kid learning to approach chess?
Well, that kid was actually me.
That was you. Okay.
Yeah, that was somewhat embarrassing story, but when I decided to learn, before I kind of changed my perspective, I initially thought that, I guess I was really stuck in the idea that I didn't want to embarrass myself or perform poorly. And there was this local chess club, and I decided the best way to learn chess would be that I would practice on my own using this computer program until I got good enough, and then I would join the local club, and I would go in, and, you know, I'd make this heroic entrance, and I would, you know, perform really well. And, you know, and then that would be the way to get into chess. And it turned out that the program that I practiced on wasn't that great a program. And when I went into the club, I was actually quickly humiliated by a better player. And I slunk away in shame. And, you know, now I see that, you know, gosh, that's the worst way to try to do it. My whole approach was to avoid losing games. And now if I did it, I would, like, try to lose 100 games. If I wanted to get into chess, I'm like, how quickly can I lose 100 games of chess? Because if that's my approach, I'm going to meet all sorts of people. I'm going to have fun. I'm going to be exposed. Like, someone probably would have told me that the chess program I was using, the computer program, was terrible. Yeah, it would have been such a better experience. So, yeah, I've completely changed the way that I think about things like that now.
And speaking of having fun, that's another one of your lessons in the book, not a little tangential to the failure, but finding the fun and making sure you have it. Why is that important?
Yeah, fun is pretty crucial. One of the reasons that fun is really critical. So fear of failure, a lot of it is just being unwilling to take chances, you know, being kind of stuck in a rut and, you know, not willing to try something else. And one of the reasons that happens is when we kind of spend too much time gritting our teeth and kind of sticking with something that we don't really enjoy, and you get kind of beaten down and you lose your enthusiasm, and then you're just afraid of trying anything, and that's just leaves you just stuck in this rut and nothing ever changes. So it's really important to find a way every day to build in some time to do something that matters to you, whatever it is, something that's meaningful to you, that you enjoy. And if you do that, and by the way, there's a lot of research studies, and we talk about these in the book, there's research studies that show that if you have more enjoyment in your life, you're more creative, you're more productive, you're more open to new possibilities. I mean, it just changes the way that you look at your life. And, I mean, so some people kind of say, like, oh, well, you know, That's a kind of a side thing. I shouldn't really worry about having fun. But really, if you don't interject some enjoyment into your life, it is very hard to change and to be in the space where you're willing to try anything new.
We're talking with Ryan Babineau. He's co-author of Fail Fast, Fail Often. And we want to hear from you. Are we telling your story here? Did you decide to pursue a passion? Did you have failures in the process? What did you learn from your failures? And have you learned to take fun seriously and make time for it? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with Ryan Babineau. He says the key to success is failure. His new book is Fail Fast, Fail Often. We want to hear from you. In your career, in your personal life, how have you turned failures into successes? When you try something new, you research carefully, plan it out, plot out everything you're going to do, and then try it? Or do you dive in, learn from your failures? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email talk@WPR.org. We'll go right to our callers. We've got Havik with us from Pewaukee. Havik, hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great topic. So, you know, I completely agree to the fact that failures will help you learn faster. But at the same time, I was wondering, you know, how practical is it to fail in a corporate environment often and still have your job?
That's a great question, Havik. So if I'm in a job, I'm willing to fail all I want. Is my boss willing to have me fail all I want?
Well, bosses oftentimes are not so patient with people failing too often. But there is a way, I think the way to think about this is what you do before you fail. So if you look at successful companies, especially here in Silicon Valley, like, for example, Google is a great example. They have a way of approaching things like new projects or new services where they put the minimum investment into it. For example, they're famous for rolling out new services that they want to try. They roll them out as a beta or a testing version with, you know, they just develop it to a minimal point, and then they put it out there and they see what happens. And then if it works out, great. They can improve it. If it's, you know, a bust, oops, I'm very sorry. Let me turn that.
That's all right.
I apologize for that. If it's a bust, they can move on to the next thing. So the way to think about this, I think, is to try to learn things in your corporate setting, to try projects with the minimal risk, the minimal investment. And if you find a way to, you know, take that first initial step without, you know, betting the farm on it, then when you fail, it's not a big deal. It's just a, you know, it's just an experiment. But if you, you know, if you make a big blunder that costs your company millions of dollars, yes, that's a big problem, and people aren't going to put up with that. So it's you kind of need to learn the strategy, and corporations need to learn this too, to learn to take on new things with the minimal first step with the least amount of risk.
What's your chapter title? Think Big, Act Small, I think it was?
Yes, yeah.
We'll go back to the phones. Thanks for bringing that up, Havik. We've got Michael with us in Greenfield. Michael, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love the show, and I'm going to have to get this book. I completely agree with what you guys are saying. I actually accidentally did this experiment last year. I'm in a band, and we came out with two albums. And the first one we took a couple years to make. And it was really good, you know, it had a lot of thought to it, but didn't really have that well of a reception. And then our second one, we made a couple months to make, and just kind of going along the same things, but made it real quick, and it was way better. I mean, I completely agree with it, what you're saying.
All right, well, Michael, thanks a lot for sharing that. You know, it makes me think, too, that with modern technology, say music recording, Ryan, instead of it being a long, elaborate process to burn vinyl albums, a band can pop a song all night the day they record it in practice, maybe get some feedback. Hey, that song was terrible. Here's what we need to change. They can fail often and keep refining their music in a way that wouldn't have been possible back in the old days.
Absolutely. That's a great example. Today, the technology and the tools that we have to create media and then just immediately post it and get feedback create opportunities to, as you're saying, fail, you know, right away. Or just get, I mean, it's not necessarily failure. It's just getting your stuff out there and getting immediate feedback. And because you can do it that day, it means it encourages you to not spend, you know, 5-6 months overworking something when you could just make something that day, get some feedback, and then improve it the next day.
One of the obstacles to this mindset that you talk about, this willingness to embrace failure, is an idea that a lot of us have a not yet view of life. We're going to do this awesome thing someday when the stars are right, when we're financially secure, when the economy's better, et cetera. How do we shake ourselves out of that?
Well, that's kind of the main thing I do as a career counselor, is try to change people's perspectives. It's hard to know exactly where it comes from, but as adults we get very good at talking ourselves out of taking action. There's always some reason why, you know, we're not prepared enough, the time's not right, we need to focus on something else, or maybe we feel too stressed right now. It's so easy to come up with excuses not to do things, and it's really you can also change. You can flip that. There's always something you can do this week that will be something new. It's something you want to explore. It's something you're curious about, and it's really important to change that mindset from always talking yourself out of living the life you deserve to just being willing to find, well, what's that little step? It doesn't matter how small it is, but what's something I can do that'll get me out there to try something new?
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Mark with us in Kenosha. Mark, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, years ago in the newspaper business, when we first started using desktop publishing techniques, somebody said to me, faster computer and it really must allow you to get your work done sooner, as though the objective was meeting the deadline. And I said, and this was, my gosh, this was the early 90s, late 80s. I said, no. I said, what it allows me to do is to try more possibilities in the same amount of time and improve what I'm doing. And what I learned from that experience, I have applied pretty much to my entire life. I will come home at night and people say, what are you going to do? And I'm going to say, well, I'm going to do some wiring in the basement, or I'm going to throw a diesel engine in my pickup truck. And they say, you know how to do that? And I said, no, but how hard could it be?
Not yet.
All
right, yeah. Mark, thanks a lot for sharing that. And that story about desktop publishing, I have the same story, but going from digital audio from audio tape to digital editing. It was never faster. You just did it eight different ways where you used to do it in one way. What do you think of Mark's story, Ryan?
I really like that example. I mean, the idea of using technology to try more things in the same amount of time, that's a really nice way to think about things. And that is an opportunity in so many fields. We have, that's something that's possible in many more fields these days that wasn't available in the past.
In our last couple minutes, I think there are probably people out there saying, okay, this sounds nice. I don't know where to start. I don't know I don't know what I want to do and fail at. Can you give us a few guidelines to get started? And let's use the words this week or maybe this weekend.
Sure. Well, one thing you can do is you can find, most of us have this list of things like the things we want to do someday or try someday. I want to try yoga or hang gliding, or I want to learn Arabic or, travel to someplace. Well, one thing is to take this to-do list that's usually, one day, a year, two, 5 years, and make it a kind of this week list. Take those things and find something, just pick one of those and find something, a little step you can do this week. So, go to sign up for a class, or go to a language class, or just, I guess it depends on what you're doing, but find some specific step. I mean, that's one way you can do it. Some other things I suggested before were to be a beginner, be willing to go out there and make mistakes, and also learn to unplan things. So instead of when there's something you're curious about trying, instead of making a big, huge production out of it and thinking about it long term and how you need to commit to it, just try to find the smallest step you can immediately take. And usually there's something you can it's just about always something you can do in the next week or two, and that's all you need to worry about. You don't have to worry about the next month or year or 5 years. Just find the thing that you can do right away.
Ryan, what are you failing at lately, or what are you preparing to fail at in the near future?
Well, let's see. I'm starting a new business, which I think I guess that will be an opportunity to fail. Gosh, it seems like I'm so good at I'm always failing at things. I actually enjoy it. What are some other things? It's funny, you're kind of
caught you off guard there.
Yeah, you caught me off guard. I mean, it's such a kind of main focus for me. I don't always think about it. It's just like, well, what am I exploring? What am I trying? One thing I'm going to try as an adult just coming up is downhill skiing.
Oh, there's a biggie.
Looking forward to, just going and taking my daughter with me, and we've already, you know, talked about how we're going to fall and, you know, just make fools of ourselves and have a great time doing it.
That's what I did last year with my daughters. It was very embarrassing, but it was a lot of fun. Ryan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Rob, thanks so much for having me.
That was Ryan Babineau. He's a career counselor and co-author of the book Fail Fast, Fail Often, How Losing Can Help You Win.